Hello and welcome to the DayZero update for February 22nd, 2015. I am Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
Packed house this week.
Packed house this week and a bit of a Game Addicts reunion as three of the four podcast members here are former Game Addicts staffers. So this ought to be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. Kind of a nostalgic feeling already here.
Yeah. So.
So for those who don't know, Phil, Teresa, and I used to work at an indie gaming website kind of based out of Norway called Game Addicts Network. It was basically where we got our start, and it was just a lot of fun. And so it's kind of cool just having the podcast here where it brings a few members of the old team together.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you guys want
and then to... they invited a hick and then and then they invited a hick like me onto it and I completely ruined it all.
Oh, that's all on. Good.
Yeah. So you want to get into what we're playing?
Sure.
Good place to start.
I think one thing you're going to be hearing a lot of from us for the next couple weeks is Dead or Alive 5 Last Round.
Yeah.
Came out back on Tuesday. I think this is the Dead or Alive game that the series has needed from the beginning. Everything about it just feels right. And, I haven't really played a DOA game that seriously since 4, but you can tell just, with Yosuke Hayashi at the helm of Team Ninja, this is a series that should be back to being a big deal in the fighting game community in pretty short order.
Yeah, all the elements are there. Let's just hope it gets adopted.
Yeah. Apparently, there's a side tournament for it at Evo, and a lot of the other smaller events are picking it up, so we'll see how this year treats it.
Yeah.
I'm still on the Ridge Racers, too. I know I haven't uploaded any videos for a week or two, but I'm still working on that, and hopefully I'll have some videos from the Pro Tour coming up probably on Tuesday or Wednesday. And then there's the a game that's already been shown on this podcast, but not really. NHL 15, I've been playing the hell out of the 7th generation version of it, and, you know, that's the good one, that's the complete one, and I started a new character on it, and I'm thinking I might actually do something completely crazy and just upload complete videos of the career mode as I play through it. I don't know how long I'll play through it, but the footage that you'll be looking at here is just stuff for me playing through the Memorial Cup on my way to the NHL draft.
Okay.
And I'm hoping we plug the footage from toward the end of the video. And just, I mean, we got two and a half hours of footage to work with, by the way, so.
Yeah, you should have enough.
Yeah. I just want to show off that slap shot.
Yeah.
I've really built this character right. I wish they had the skills competition as part of the Live the Life mode when you go to the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that my character at this point would be the guy to dethrone Zdeno Chara in his 108.8-mile-an-hour hardest shot. So, what have you been playing, Phil?
Well, Defense Grid 2. Still
what do you think
that.
He is?
That's true.
Yeah. And,
he is playing other things, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, and Dead or Alive 5 Last Round.
Yes.
Yeah, I do have to put Tecmo and Team Ninja on notice for one thing, though.
Oh?
When you release the game,
It
has a matchmaking bug which causes the game to crash, we call that a showstopper, folks. You should not ship with a bug like that.
We call it inadequate playtesting.
Inadequate playtesting. It takes 45 seconds to reproduce this bug. No.
Yeah, they didn't test it.
So, yeah, I know they'll fix it, but come on, guys. I mean, this is this is part of the reason that this show has the name that it does. But still.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, we'd rather have a day zero update on a game to prevent these things from happening than to have it get out in the wild and people not being able to play it at its, you know, full capacity.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's, other than that, you know, other than not being able to play online, that's,
it's probably going to be our footage for next week as well.
Yeah.
Just putting that out there.
Assuming
we've already got about 15 minutes of matches recorded. We would have had a lot more, but something went up with my capture card. And,
yeah.
I think my computer was just being overtaxed at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was that, and I'm also playing through Transistor a second time through the New Game Plus mode.
Yeah, you've been talking about this quite a bit lately. You're really enjoying that game.
Yeah, that game is really good.
Yes.
Have any of you guys played it? Like, a lot of it?
I haven't had that one binge that I know is coming, but with the...
I don't have a PS4.
You don't need a PS4, really.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on PC, isn't it?
Yeah. It's on PC.
It's on Steam. Is it on Xbox One? Because I'd like to give them more money.
Let me take a quick look here.
No, it's not.
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Is it just PS4 and PC, then?
For now, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And Mac and Linux,
I know it's coming to PlayStation Vita.
Yeah.
So that's another reason to get a PlayStation TV.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, wait, no, was that Bastion that's going to PlayStation Vita? Because I'm not even seeing anything about a Vita release.
I think Bastion's going to PS4.
Huh. So one of them was...
Anyway.
Hey, Phil, I have a question about Transistor.
Sure.
How are you liking the soundtrack for it?
Oh, my God. That soundtrack is just genius. And it, not only is it, like, welcome...
Yeah, I gotta say.
But what Darren Korb...
Yeah, it's just...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Think about having four people on the same thing. We're all going to be talking over each other.
That's okay. It just makes
but yeah, it is definitely one of. It is one of the best soundtracks for a game I've heard in a long time.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Not only
it's good.
The composition really good, but the subtle uses of distortion that he does throughout the tracks. It really adds, like, kind of a subtle layer of tension to the game. That, you know, unless, if you're playing through headphones, you'll notice it. On TV speakers, it's a little harder to notice, but...
That's probably why I didn't pick up on it quite as much.
Yeah. Yeah, that that soundtrack and the vocal tracks with Ashley Barrett are also really good. So, which leads me to Brandon.
Cool, cool. I had not heard any of her work.
No? Yeah, the Supergiant put all of the entire soundtrack on their YouTube channel, so you can just go there and listen to the whole thing free of charge. It's like, I really like it when companies do that. Brandon, what have you been doing?
Obviously, I've been playing Dragon Age Inquisition. I think I might be on the... around the final stretch for the main campaign on that one. I'm also playing Remember Me still. Not as much, but I have. And I also, the other day I went and went and splurged on the season pass for Life is Strange.
I'm starting to notice a theme here.
Oh? And what would that theme be?
Same developer?
Yeah, don't not entertain. I gotta admit, the first Life is Strange, of course, we've only got the first episode. It's available right now. And I gotta say, I really liked it. You know, there's obviously it's got a couple of flaws. The old Unreal Engine is obviously starting to show its age. And that's what they used on this one. Although they did combine it with this sort of like painterly aesthetic that could be really striking, but also a little disorienting at first.
Yeah.
I gotta say, one of the other things is, of course, is The lip syncing for the game is a little off when it comes to dialogue, but that's probably because since Dontnod Entertainment is a French company, this was probably originally all done in French, so.
And they didn't adjust it.
Yeah.
Also, you can tell that these are a bunch of 30-year-old, 40-year-old people trying to write dialogue for high school kids.
Yeah, it wasn't the Polygon that said something about that?
How
jarring that was?
Yeah. The way that Chloe basically says hella a lot, it's like, I thought we were on South Park. I was like, stop saying hella, Chloe!
See, I say that a lot, but I'm also 33. So
yeah. But it was quite good, though. And you can basically call it, you could in some ways almost call it like Dawson's Creek Twilight Zone Edition, because it's, you know, the basic conceit for the game, you know, is, of course, is that, you know, Max, the character you're playing, discovers that she can, like, reverse time. And
it's also
kind
of the replay mechanic.
Yeah. Basically, every time you go through the as you go through the game, you can basically reverse time and, you can decide if you screwed up something, you can go back and do it again, try and do it again, or you can start like an other sequence of events. But, and, you know, they don't really get heavy into that mechanic until, I mean, like, it's still there and it does affect the game, but it's not like the central theme of it till towards the end of the first episode. Before that, it's mostly, sort of getting you introduced to the characters and sort of the situations that's going on. It's a rather, it's a cozy little story, kind of like how, Persona 4 started out, where it's this sort of, little town with these small group of close-knit characters and everything, which I kind of like. It was good. Also, there's been folks who have sort of brought up the really like extreme homoerotic tension between Max and Chloe, and Chloe, and I think her name is Amanda, which is one of the things in this game is that there's this girl that went missing named Amanda before the game starts that was friends with Chloe, and she disappeared like 6 months or something ago, and Chloe has been pretty much having a one-person campaign to find this girl, and they lay on the homoeroticism pretty thick in the game.
See, I think we heard more about that during the course of its development than after it actually came out.
Yeah. Anyway, that's actually something a lot of folks brought up. That's something else I was going to bring up. If you've read a little bit about the struggles that Dontnod Entertainment went through to get this game published, you'll know the biggest problem they had is that every developer they went to kept wanting them to change the main character to
a guy.
Yeah. I mean, they basically had to fight tooth and nail to keep the main character a woman, and finally they found Square Enix, who was willing to, let them keep the main character a woman.
Some of the best storytellers in gaming, go figure.
Yeah.
I mean, think of it this way, think of Naughty Dog, they'll tell you, they had to basically fight tooth and nail to, when they did The Last of Us, to have Ellie as front and center on the box art for The Last of Us. And I mean, that's Naughty Dog, somebody who, since the first Crash Bandicoot game, have pretty much hit it out of the park left, right, and center every single time.
And it also tells you how somebody, marketing...
If if somebody like Naughty Dog, who has such a who has an almost spotless track record in the gaming industry, has a problem with something like that, then you know there's an issue.
Yeah. I think the issue is marketing department megalomania getting out of control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Likely so.
But, you know, that's the first episode of Life is Strange. Quite enjoyed it. Anybody out there who's listening who hasn't played it, give it a try. Yep. It's a very unique and enjoyable gaming experience.
Cool.
Teresa, you an update?
Oh, I have been continuing to work on Mario Kart 8. We're still unlocking stuff. Doing a lot of gaming as a family there.
Yeah.
Did you get the season pass?
Nope, not yet.
Some good stuff.
May. Yeah?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. What were you going to say about it?
I was just going to say $12 for the season pass, and you get a ton of courses. Half of them are out now, half of them are coming next month, and six new riders and something like 16 courses.
Oh, that's right. The ones that are coming out next month. Yeah, actually, we do have that. We've already played the courses that are already out.
Okay. Cool. And then the next batch is going to be Animal Crossing themed.
Yep, which is also something else I've been playing lately. still playing. Still enjoying it. It's you know, these kind of games, they just have a life. It's almost like, you know, an MMO that you just keep going back to, but it's not.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've been playing that, a little bit of Civ 5 and Pokemon. And then something probably just a little bit out there. We've had a measles outbreak in my area lately. So I've been playing the original Oregon Trail.
Nice.
Yeah. That just about fits my personality, I think.
So I was going to say, you may have been playing Contagium or something, but no, let's go all the way back.
I also have a little kid in the house who likes to come over and take a look at whatever's on my screen, too. So. Yeah. So that presents its challenges, but nothing, you know, nothing really new for me right now. It's I'm just rehashing in a way, and continuing on what I've been working on, trying to decide what my next new thing is going to be.
And I've been trying to steer toward a PlayStation TV for quite some time.
I got
some Trails
say,
in the Sky, some Persona, you know.
It looks like a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'm also waiting to see what I get for my birthday, because that's pretty much what I'm going to play next.
Yeah.
All right. So, moving on to the news.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of follow-up from last week there, Brandon.
Yeah, the folks doing the Windwalkers Kickstarter this week, they put up some more info. They gave us some gameplay footage. They described sort of how the game itself is going to work. A little bit more explanation on the game world and who it is that you'll be and what your goal is and what it is you'll be who it is you'll be going up against. Just to sort of give you the idea, I mentioned last time the whole sort of thing of the Windwalkers universe is the fact that it's all these folks living on this world that is constantly being ravaged by these extremely powerful winds. Well, the game itself is a action RPG roguelike. Basically what it is that you are a member in this in a group called a Horde. And the Horde's thing is their whole existence, they keep walking towards the wind. Their ultimate goal is to find where the winds are originating from, because they don't know where the winds come from, and they don't know what is causing it. All they know is that they know which direction it's blowing, and that's where they got to go. And because the winds are so powerful, the world that you're living in is always changing. So when you're playing this horde, and the thing is with the horde is each person in the horde has their own class. So there's like, first of all, there's the Pathfinder, who's the person in the very front of the horde leading the group. There's also like a weapons master or a defender whose whole thing is to fight off wildlife, pirates. There's also like this militarized group whose whole mission is to kill the horde at all cost. He's got master of weapons like swords and crossbows and some firearms. He also has a little hang glider on his back so that he can actually fly up a bit over the horde and survey the area around them to see if there's anything, any hazards or anything coming. They've also got like a mender, which of course is like a healer. They've got a character called a Windmaster, or an Arrowmaster, which is basically their version of a mage. It's a person who has the ability to sort of harness the powers of the wind and can use it for defensive purposes. Okay. And the whole point is you all have to stick together. You know, if you all branch out and go out individually, you're pretty much going to get killed.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to stick together really close. And they call it the ship, which is, it's all of the members of the horde packed tightly together in a formation. When the wind is at its strongest, it sort of acts as, they said, it's almost sort of rhythmic in the way that it works. You know, you've all got to stick together and weather the wind and all the hazards that it's blowing towards you. As Ron White once said, it's not that the wind is blowing, it's what the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
And you know, you'll get trees and rocks and all types of debris.
All manner of
And then
scrap.
When the wind dies down, and then when the wind dies down and is at its weakest, then you can go off and explore and find, you know, materials that you need. You can, you know, fight off against, you know, wildlife, pirates, etc., to get, you know, experience points and stuff. Now, the thing is, like I said, it's a roguelike. And what that means is you're pretty much not going to get there the first time around. like every roguelike, you know, you're going to die, but then you come back a bit stronger.
Yeah.
And you try and get a little bit further the last horde got. And of course, since the wind of this world is so powerful, that also means the terrain and everything changes too. So you know, that's sort of the folks who have read the source novel, which I'll get to in a second, they say this actually goes along pretty well thematically with the source of the book, because the whole sort of thing with the book is that there's all these hordes that have gone by the time of the book. There's like it's like part of the 34th horde. The game itself is like a sort of like takes place as is kind of like a prequel, and it's basically like it's all the hordes that went before. And you know, the last horde may not have succeeded, but you know a bit more and you're a little stronger. It's very interesting, I gotta say. Just the whole, you know, as the world that they've created and the art style. Just for the record, no, the horde is not all men. You can actually customize the individual horde members, for, you know, gender and cosmetics stuff, as well as class and stuff like that. You know, just the whole horde, and really the thing is, it's really good. Like I said, this is a transmedia project, so on top of the game, they've also got the movie that's going to happen, which is a animated film that actually is an adaptation of the book itself, which, like I said, the game is the prequel. There's also going to be the comics. They're actually planning on doing three different comic series. There's going to be an American type comic series, which is more based around the video game and the individual characters within it. Then they're going to have the hardcover, the French European style graphic novel, which is going to be like a straight adaptation of the movie. And then they're going to have a manga, which is a story of some of the game characters and movie characters as youths. I forgot to mention also, they actually, if just to show you just the amount of appeal that this thing has had to a lot of folks in the gaming and film world, they got Yoshitaka Amano on this project.
Whoa!
Yeah. He's actually one of the art people on it. If you go on the Kickstarter page, they got some of his concept art for the game on there.
Wow.
Yeah. Here's the thing. They've said and they've I actually asked the folks over there myself. They've sort of spent a good lot of money already on getting this project together, and they've already said that they've got some investors in the wings ready to put some money in if needed.
Hang on a second, Brandon. Okay.
If the basic idea is, if for some reason, because they said they really strongly believe in it, and sort of the message overall of it, because that's another thing about this whole universe, is it's actually got something to say. You know, you've got to think about this idea of this group of people constantly willing to risk their lives generation over generation against this all oppressive force coming against them just so they can get a little farther to finally ending it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty...
some background stuff
that's a
on here.
Oh, Lord, who is it? But, there's a, you know, it's the sort of message of solidarity and everything. It's just, people are really, you know, they really strongly believe in the project. Yeah. They've actually got, here's something that's really going to blow your mind. On top of, I know that I said Elaine DiMaggio, the original author, is involved in writing the scripts and stuff for the game and the movie. They also got one of the writers from Letters from Iwo Jima on it, too.
Huh.
That's the Clint Eastwood movie. Yeah. Also, just to say it... if nothing else, we did have one other positive thing, which is that last week, Elaine DiMaggio went online on YouTube and announced that they have that Horde of the Counterwind, which is the novel that is the best-selling, highly acclaimed novel that this whole universe is based on and is like considered to be an essential book in French science fiction. It has now gotten a English translator. It is set to be published in English sometime next year.
Definitely.
You know, if nothing else, we've got that.
I think we did that.
Going back to the design that you
and
Well, no, I was just going to say something. I haven't actually looked into this personally, but you say action RPG, roguelike, given the setting and the entire concept, I'm almost getting a Seiken Densetsu vibe from Secret of Mana.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
That's huge.
if they can pull this off effectively, they've got a real game changer here, I think.
Oh man.
I mean, and like I said, Yoshitaka Amano is on this project, which should give you an idea of just how much buzz this affected in the production community. So
tells me everything I need to know.
But those of you who want to go, just remember the project. Just remember what I said. The project is called Windwalkers. They've got a thing on Kickstarter. Also, the company behind it is Forge Animation. You can go on their website, which is forge-animation.net. It's in French and in English, and you'll be able to see, you know, get some more information on the game world, as well as links to the Kickstarter page. You'll also be able to see some of the other projects they're working on. One other project they've actually got in the wings is another movie/game project, which is based on a heroic fantasy novel from French called Abysme. And it was written by... hold on just a second. It's written by one of the big heroic fantasy writers in that country, in the French speaking language. Hold on, let me go real quick. Okay, it's Abysme, not Abysme. It's Abysme, and it's by Matthew Gabarit, and he's a fairly prolific heroic fantasy author in the French language. Also worked on he's also done a lot of work on pen and paper RPGs. And if some of you who are old school PC gamers may remember a 3D RPG adventure game from the mid-90s for the PC called Outcast, he also did some work on that game as well.
Okay.
But again, they're planning on doing a film adaptation, which will be both be sort of a 2D 3D hybrid, and they're also planning to make something akin to an MMO game for it. So they've got some very fascinating, interesting projects in the works, and I hope all this succeeds. I wish them all the success in the world, because they've certainly got my attention.
I mean, I had a look at the gameplay footage that they posted up there. It looks a little rough right now, but you can definitely see that something is there. I am totally on board with this. I want to see this happen.
Whatever happens with that Kickstarter, you know, we at least know that they believe strongly in this project and they're willing to go through with it either way. So come hell or high water, that project's going to come through in some form.
Yeah. The Kickstarter looks a little bit grim.
Something could always happen. They may have a magic card up their sleeve. But, like I said, even if the Kickstarter doesn't go through, they've got investors ready to help them out. You know, they've still got all this talent behind them who are really behind the project. So again, Yoshitaka Amano, that's a big friggin' coup right there.
It really is.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Go look at the Kickstarter page, go look at their website.
I'll post a link to the Kickstarter on the Tumblr page. So
it'll also be in the show.
Also if you speak French, Alain Damasio, the author, there's like a whole website dedicated to the Horde of the Counterwind novel. Like I said, though, it's all in French, but if you read and speak French, it's there, and it'll give you, you know, character bios and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't speak French, so it's still a cool looking site, though.
Yeah.
So from interesting sci-fi to something that's not sci-fi. We got news.
But it's still good news.
Yeah. Rock Band 4 is apparently a thing, and it's apparently going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know much more than that?
Not really. They teased it last week with the first Rock Band 3 DLC in a long time, and they weren't really subtle about it either.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rise of the Phoenix and Back to the Shack. So it, I mean, it doesn't really leave much room for interpretation there.
Yeah. I'm just wondering what they could do, I mean, other than go the same kind of route that Rocksmith did.
Well, the reports are that it's just going to be a new Rock Band game for 8th generation. Yeah. So it's keeping the franchise alive as we move forward with a new set of consoles.
Yeah. I mean, I still strongly believe, you know, those music games should still have a place in the gaming world. Absolutely. I mean, those, if you do them right, they're fantastic group gaming experiences.
And look at what Guitar Hero and Rock Band have done for just awareness of and participation in music in general.
Yeah.
I mean, this
I gotta say, Guitar Hero is both the best and worst thing to happen to classic rock in a long time.
Yes.
It's the best thing in the world in that it introduced, you know, the current generation to, you know, all the old school rock bands, you know, the Beatles and Nirvana and, you know, Kiss and, you know, Kansas of all people, and Boston and Journey and, you know, stuff that, you know, I was actually listening to myself all the way back in middle school, and everybody thought I was a nerd.
Yeah. It exposed some people to Buckethead who were not ready for him.
Yeah.
That's the other.
Or, you know, Primus. Or Primus. Yes. Yeah. Or Primus and John the Fisherman.
Yes.
But, you know, but the thing, though, is it also made a lot of people think, hey, I can play guitar now. No, you can't.
No, you can't, no. But,
I fully encourage anyone who wants to get started because of it. The world always needs more musicians.
Yeah.
And it was funny, too, because I remember, like, I don't know how many of y'all watch the Fine Brothers channel on YouTube. They have, you know, the teens react to and kids react to and elders react to. And one of the episodes they had was kids react to the Beatles. And it's like, you know, 8-year-old, 10-year-old kids. And then they see the footage and you know, and they were like, oh, my God, I love the Beatles. And it's like, wow. Little 8-year-old, 10-year-old kids recognize the Beatles.
Yeah. Well,
there's something Guitar Hero and Rock Band have done right.
That's when you know you got something truly timeless on your hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the current high school kids, you know, they showed, you know, Nirvana Smell Like Teen Spirit and, Heart-Shaped Boxed and the thing they did on MTV Unplugged concert to teenagers, and all of them recognize Nirvana.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, and you know, Kurt Cobain's been dead for almost 10 years now.
20 years, actually.
20 years, yeah.
That was 1994.
Yeah, he died. Yeah, he committed suicide in 1994. And they all, most of them recognized him.
Yep.
It's just a good sample, you know. The kids are all right.
What would you guys like to see in a new Rock Band, though, since we're talking about it?
Oh.
How about not a story mode?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm on board with that.
Yeah, that's what killed Guitar Hero.
It's true.
Yeah.
I really don't when I say not a story mode,
I mean, there can be like a sort of, you know, you start out in a basement and you end in a stadium. That's fine.
Yeah.
Like those little cutscenes that were in Guitar Hero 2, I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah.
Those are just fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
But actual story, no thank you.
Yeah, we don't need Gene Simmons narrating it just guitar doesn't work. Let's just no. Just let's not do that again, please.
Yeah. Now, if you want to make another Brutal Legend and have Gene Simmons narrate it, that's fine. But
definitely
but
not mad, at least.
Not Tar Heroes. Yeah.
I don't really know as far as anything that I'd want to see added to a next generation Guitar Hero Rock Band kind of game. But
I can think of a few more bands I'd like to see on there.
Well, that, I mean, those are kind of, you never know what you're going to find in the set list, of course, but as far as features go, I think you've got a pretty rock solid concept from the start.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said,
maybe more instruments, but I'm not even sure what you could do that you would get mileage for out of a lot of songs. I think part of the reason that the genre kind of plateaued a few years ago is just because they got it to an optimal point right then, and there wasn't really anywhere else to go. So,
yeah,
I think it's going to
once you
move into this part now.
Once you
this
got
phase where you got it just really
tick five, you know, microphone, guitar, bass, drums, and keyboards, you've pretty much it.
Yeah.
I can see
add on anymore.
I could see them adding another guitar for so you could have like a singer, rhythm guitarist, bass guitarist,
lead.
And
so you can just have the whole Dragon Force.
Pretty much.
By the way, that's another great thing Guitar Hero did, is it introduced the world to Fire in the Flames, which is one of my favorite songs ever.
And random fact, Wonder Boy fans over at Dragon Force.
Really?
Yeah, I know that. Wonder Boy and Pac-Man.
Yep.
If you've ever listened to Fire in the Flames, you know, the Herman Lee, the guitar player, he puts a lot of video game sounds into his music.
Is one
and
of us.
You can hear the Pac-Man sounds in the Fire in the Flames. That's just him and his guitar.
They have an interesting problem, though, going forward, if they're going to be bringing Rock Band 4 to, like, the next gen, current gen consoles now, in that they've got such a huge library built up on the past gen consoles, and people have, already invested a huge amount of money. I mean,
they've got to find a way to grandfather that in.
Yeah, because I've purchased, 800 songs here.
I don't want to be the guy who has to port all those over, but, somebody has to do it.
Yeah.
So you gotta There's no question.
Figure out a way for those to carry over because, it'll be a lot of work initially, but it'll give people who've already spent a lot of money on the game a nice built-in library that they can just jump right into.
Yeah.
So, that would be nice.
And also the question of licensing, and that's going to be a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
American copyright law, folks.
Yeah.
Gotta love it.
Yeah. So, moving on from Rock Band, a recent interview with Hajime Tabata over at Square Enix, things are coming along really well for Final Fantasy 15, I have to say. But
yeah, all things considered.
The number that was reported for completion was 60% on Final Fantasy 15. Now, to put this in a proper context, back last fall when he was doing all those interviews in support of the game and everything, he put that same completion percentage at 55%. Since September, they've made 5% progress on finishing the game. Now, that being said, apparently, on an optimistic side of it, it sounds like that 5% was just a ton of grunt work, engine work, you know, under the hood stuff, getting the game together.
I would say so, because if you've seen footage from that demo they released recently online, if that's what the game's going to be, that's pretty significant.
Yeah. So apparently the hardest work is done, and Tabata has said that he thinks that the next 20% of the development cycle will come pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So quickly enough to get the game on track for a holiday release? Probably not. If I were a betting man, I would say that we're probably looking at a Final Fantasy XV release in spring 2016. But, yeah, there was like a 40-45 minute demo.
And it looked just gorgeous.
For me personally, it's not exactly what I want to see a Final Fantasy game look like, but I would love to see these guys do a Phantasy Star Online game.
Yeah.
Just putting that out there. Or some other game of that nature, because they clearly have a talent for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For me personally, I think Final Fantasy XV may not be a smashing success as a Final Fantasy game, but I'm probably still going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
If I tell myself to forget that it's called Final Fantasy.
Yeah, it's much more action-oriented than most of the other Final Fantasy games. But you got to give it this much. It's not walking down a corridor half the game.
Yeah. It's true. I was about to say we don't know that for a fact yet, but they've been pretty upfront about not wanting to do that again. So
yeah,
so that in itself would be a step in the right direction. I still don't like that. It seems to be consistent with this whole idea of everything must become an action RPG. But to put it in the proper context, this is kind of them salvaging a relic from the previous era at Square Enix. It was already well along in development when the new head of the company, Yosuke Matsuda, took over, and he wants to take things in a more traditional JRPG direction, but not while not stepping on toes of people who have been working on the Final Fantasy XV project, and I respect that.
Yeah.
And so I would say for those who love their JRPGs in the way they were when the genre got started, and for those boom years in the 90s, I would say stay tuned, because I'm pretty sure Final Fantasy 16 is going to be very much in that vein.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I think I'm probably going to pass on 15, because from what I've seen, it looks solid enough, but nothing in that game as far as settings wise interests me in the least. It doesn't click with me, and very few of the Final Fantasy games in the past have.
Yeah,
we'll see if they go back to.
I think once you got to 10, there were just so many radical changes in the series that it kind of lost an identity.
Yeah. We'll wait and see. See if 16 is any better.
You never know. It might. You never know. The end product may turn out to be a game changer. You never know.
Yeah.
You know. I'm going to try and be optimistic.
Yeah. I'll be picking it up. I'll be playing it. I'm just not expecting it to land on my all-time favorite games lists or whatever.
Yeah. I'll give it a rental, but retail games are $70. So if I'm going to drop $70 on a game, I really got to be sure I like it.
That's true. Yeah. I've got my pre-order for Type-0 HD, so I'll be getting the demo for it. And you can rest assured I'll be streaming and capping stuff off of that.
Okay.
So
yeah. Well, Phil, think of it this way. You know, you got to pay $10 extra for something, but guess what? Guess what else you get?
What?
You're Canadian. You get free health care.
That's true.
Yeah, I do get that.
Well, and, you know, not just extra money for the game, you know. You've got a lot of other things that you can pick up and play, too, that you may enjoy more. So, yeah. I can't blame you for not wanting to buy it, but to rent it to give it a good shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Teresa, have you been following this one at all?
No, I haven't been following 15 because I still haven't played some of the, I'm a little behind. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
What's the earliest Final Fantasy you've played?
Well, Final Fantasy 1. That's why I started dating my husband, so I could
I questioned that wrong. I actually phrased that wrong. What's the latest Final Fantasy that you've played?
The latest I finished was 10. And I started 10-2, I went, bleh, and I left.
Yeah, I really do not like 10-2.
I'm probably one of the outliers who liked 10-2 because it had it brought back the ATB, it brought back the job system, and so I was just a happy little puddle of goo with a controller in my hand, feeling like I was just being so immersed in the things that make Final Fantasy what it is to me. I know I'm one of the outliers on that, but plus there was something almost Sega-like in the presentation, and I'm a sucker for anything that even smacks of Sega, as I kind of proved last week.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. All right, so it looks like Kotaku and Polygon, they're starting to... There's some questions that need to be asked about Sony handhelds.
Well, the PlayStation Vita turned 3 this month, or next month. And, you know, it's not a sales phenomenon. The people who have theirs and have them for very specific reasons love them quite a bit. Myself, one of them, as an owner of a PlayStation Vita and two PlayStation TVs, and possibly a third one coming.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Reasons. It takes some explaining, but anyway, so Kotaku and Polygon took the opportunity to present some of the questions surrounding Sony handhelds, whether they should make another one, what they should do, if they do, what people think of their PlayStation Vitas in general, and so on and so forth. It's really interesting to think about. But I think one of the main problems with the PlayStation Vita is that it sort of accidentally stumbled into some of the trappings that Nintendo intentionally, or you'd swear intentionally, does. Releasing a product and then having a better version or an alternative version further down the road. If Sony does this again, and I really hope they do, because the PlayStation Vita is such a fantastic JRPG platform that, you know, I take mine with me wherever I go, and I've got a 32 gig memory card loaded in my PlayStation Vita. I've got one in my PlayStation TV. Almost exclusively JRPGs, straight up, just, and, but the fact is, I look at the PlayStation TV, and it's, I think it's a great platform, despite its shortcomings. I think if Sony does a third handheld, they have to integrate the two platforms. They need to make a handheld that, you know, it's as hardware intensive as they want it to be, because they love making really beefy handhelds, and I'm never going to begrudge them that. Put the HDMI port on it. Let us just feed it out as a controller, and then we won't have those compatibility problems with the touch screens and so on. Not to mention not having to buy another piece of hardware further down the road when they realize that it actually is a fantastic idea to consoleize it. And they already knew that it was a good idea to consoleize their handhelds, because one of the very first things they changed on the PSP was to put a component out port on it. So they already knew that this was something that people wanted to do. And there are so many good JRPGs and so many good games in general coming to the PlayStation Vita that kind of fly under the radar that deserve better than to be relegated to a handheld. I mean, these are games that belong on the TV, and having the ability to just make that happen with a port on the unit itself, rather than having to release a console version of the handheld, it's just kind of ridiculous to me. I can't argue with the price point. $100 can't be beat, but
nope.
And now $80, but I don't know. I think it's something that they should sit down, hash out everything they want to do with it, and make sure they get it right from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
But you mentioned it. I will say, PS Vita is a really, their niche is that they've gotten a lot of great Japanese games.
It never
on that system.
PlayStation.
Yeah.
Whereas you could make a very good case that their console arm kind of has had that identity crisis, particularly over the last 8, 9, 10 years.
Yeah, the problem I think that Sony's facing with the Vita or any of their handhelds, actually this has been a problem with every single handheld they've ever released, is they have priced themselves out of the market.
Yeah.
And by the time they drop their price, Nintendo has already...
Nintendo's ran circles around them.
Yeah. So...
Yep.
If they're going to come up with another handheld, they need to be competitive with the price of the 3DS at the time, not, price themselves above it.
And not even matching it, but getting close enough to it that they can get a good foothold before... Because Nintendo handhelds of late, they become sales phenomenons every time without exception, but they also take a long-ass time to get their traction.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where the DS, the 3DS, the new 3DS, well, we don't know anything as far as what the new 3DS is going to be doing as far as long-term traction goes, but the 3DS or the DS and the 3DS both got off to dismal starts, and the doom and gloomers were out in force.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Sony needs to just come out aggressively, get to within $30 to $50 of it, and start pouring out those must-have games. And, there's no telling whether they could line up the timing that closely or not. But it would be good to have a third handheld project kind of in their back pocket.
Yeah.
Throw down, because with Nintendo just launching the new 3DS XL, it's probably unlikely that they're going to be launching a new handheld anytime soon. But have the project in the works and get ready to strike, because when they do release an actual successor to the 3DS, it's going to take quite a while to really get it going, unless they unless they change their approach considerably. So, I think that would be very much to Sony's benefit with a theoretical third handheld. And for fuck's sake, no proprietary media.
Yeah. We have micro SD cards. They work. Let's just use those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now we got to talk about the order.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Do we have to?
Well, we should touch on it.
So you know what it's like when there's a horse race and then one of the horses basically snaps his leg right out of the gate.
You know what's going to happen to the horse.
Yeah, that's pretty much the order 18. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry, Shane, we got to put you down. That pretty much happened to the Order 1886.
Yeah, so what happened? Somebody got a hold of an advanced copy, and I'm just going to say this from the beginning. If you get a game early, congratulations. Play it, enjoy it by all means. Doing a complete playthrough Let's Play a week before the game comes out is probably not the classy thing to do.
That's kind of a douchey move.
But it did point out some apparently very legitimate flaws with the game. Specifically, a grand total of a 5 to 7 hour campaign between the Let's Play and what some reviewers have since reported. It's somewhere in there. Somehow in a 5 to 7 hour game, they repeated boss fights. I don't even know how you do that with a game that has been given the delays that the order has.
Yeah.
Even when it was just being shown to the media, there were already reports of it being catastrophically linear. like that it's a borderline rail shooter.
Yeah.
But once you get to the Let's Play, there were no apparent replay incentives to speak of, no unlockables, no New Game Plus.
See, now that right there was the what really kills it for me.
Yes.
Because, I mean, there's nothing wrong with a short campaign if it's good and it makes you want to go back and do it again and again.
Yeah, you need that incentive. And honestly, I would much rather play a great game that has a five-hour first-player mode that will keep me coming back time and time again than a 40-hour game that's just pumped with filler and is generally overall weak from start to finish. But you...
Final Fantasy 13.
Yeah. So the point is that we're not attacking short games here. We're attacking short games that are devoid of replay value. And
like short games that are actually good. You know, Mirror's Edge, Heavenly Sword. Star Fox 64. Metal Gear Solid. Short games, but a lot of fun.
Yes.
And actually had a lot going for it. And in Mirror's Edge case, they actually kind of a game changer, actually. But
and then the reviews started coming out, and they've been pretty much consistent with what we learned from the Let's Play. Sony, for their part, took out a copyright complaint or something. They got rid of the Let's Play, but the damage had already been done, and I think it pretty well torpedoed the launch of the game. Probably with good reason, but again, I would say if you get a store to break street, or if you somehow just happen to come into an advanced copy of the game, leaking a Let's Play as the first thing you do really isn't the classy option.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure this guy is never going to get another advanced copy from Sony.
Well, not from Sony.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly how he got it, but yeah, it's,
you know, I mean that
he's on the
that
list. Just,
You know, at least, you know, but I will say, you know, with all its problems, I will say the Order 1886 did have an interesting universe and an interesting scenario that, you know, and this is, you know, I would have liked to have seen it explored further, but, you know, and you hate, I don't care, you know, you all, I hate seeing a new IP, you know, that gets shot down like that. Because we all need a little innovation in the game industry, but God, the execution was just shoddy at best.
Yeah. What did they do with all those delays that Sony gave them?
Really probably updated the graphics.
Yeah.
Because I honestly think this game is mostly just graphics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, they wrote a universe where Nikola Tesla is your weapons geek. And apparently they completely squandered that.
Yeah.
They could have done some really cool shit with that. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I mean,
this will be one that I probably end up renting because, again, I'm not spending $70 for a 5 to 7 hour campaign.
No. I wouldn't spend $60. I wouldn't spend $40 on a 5 hour game. Just.
And, you know, you'll rent it and you'll probably platinum it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the sound of it.
You know, this is a perfect game for PlayStation Now.
It really is. They could use that to, you know, if they wanted to turn this into a positive, they could use that as a front and center game for PlayStation Now. Mm-hmm. And they'd probably have a flagship there.
Yeah.
Instead, mm-hmm. they put it in a box and sell it for $60 to $70. No.
Yeah.
No thanks.
You have any thoughts on this, Teresa?
That's insane. I cannot even believe. Yeah, I have thoughts on.
Like, I could actually feel the pressure bubbling up as we were talking, and I was. No, go ahead.
What are you thinking?
Excuse me, folks. I need to go and lock myself in my bomb shelter for a second.
It's like.
I don't know. It just seems like, you know, another in the long line of. Just screwing over gamers lately, releasing buggy things, just, yeah, I have thoughts.
And to frame this correctly, we're talking $12 to $14 an hour of gaming.
Yeah. That's sad. If you're going to spend that much, you know, you're going to go out somewhere like Dave and Buster's and get some alcohol with your game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'll be at the bottom of the bottle by the time you realize that you spent $60 to $70 on this.
Enough
of the depressing
this is, stuff. You know, I got to say, though, is this maybe just a symptom of a trend in the AAA gaming where the AAA publisher developers are trying too hard to emulate Hollywood movies and sacrificing gameplay in the process?
I think this would have been entirely consistent with Sony first party's approach to things circa 2004.
Yeah. You know, because I got to be honest.
I would say it's a really cynical development approach, but I can't say that you're wrong either.
Yeah, I really do think that there is this trend to try and emulate Hollywood movies too much, and I think it does a disservice to AAA gaming in general.
Which is part of the reason I say AAA will eat itself.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
yeah, eventually.
Yeah. I don't understand.
At least AAA push it forward even further, even faster than I expected it to. Yeah.
At least AAA gaming as we know it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even understand why you would in a video game where everybody who's going to be playing this game is using at a 16:9 TV, you would force the aspect ratio to 2:35:1. That's CinemaScope, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And I'll tell you why. Less pixels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the why on anything like that, you know, aspect ratio, it should be coming down to what do the game. And they don't care because apparently they think we're going to spend money on subpar things. So I encourage everybody out there.
We almost did,
yeah. But vote with your wallet. Yeah. Vote with your wallet.
That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that I'm against the idea of like an interactive movie or anything, but, you know, because believe it or not, I actually did really like Heavy Rain.
Yeah.
Beyond Two Souls, not so much.
Wasn't
but,
Heavy Rain like 40 when it launched, though, or was it 60?
It was 60.
Oh, I think, wow. Yeah. But, you know, but that's not what the order was supposed to be. Yeah, it was also fairly long and well written, actually. But,
was it replay value?
You know, that's not what the order. Yeah, kind of, because okay, yeah. There's different endings and everything.
So, yeah.
But that's not what the order. Yeah, but see, that's the Order 1886 is not supposed to be an interactive movie. It's supposed to be a third-person action game.
Yeah.
That's what it was sold to us as. And what we ended up is getting a cutscene fest with occasional gunplay, and that's it.
Yeah. Okay, I'm depressed. Let's move on.
Yeah. So, for better news out of the PlayStation brand, Sony is in the midst of some restructuring. PlayStation brand doing fantastic. Sony could be doing better. And all indications are that, well, what they're doing is they're categorizing all of every branch of their business as what they're calling growth drivers, stable profit generators, and volatility management. And Sony is taking their entire gaming business, not just PlayStation, but other arms of it as well, and they're categorizing as growth drivers, something to build the company around as moving forward. Things like their home electronics arm, their cellular divisions, those are going to be in the volatility management category, and I wouldn't be surprised if they slowly phase them out entirely.
Yeah, I think there seems to be a shift here in their approach. They seem to be shifting away from the very low margin commodity stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they've already sold their computer division off. I wouldn't be surprised if their cell division and their audio video division and their TV division all get sold off eventually as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all in... Kaz Hirai has a plan here, apparently, so let's see how he does.
And not many people know the PlayStation division better than him.
Yeah. He knows what it could be, and I think he has a pretty good idea how to get it there. The order of 1886 notwithstanding.
Yeah, not entirely sure exactly how they could have possibly bunged that one up.
You had freaking Nikolai Tesla as one of the characters in your game. How could you screw this up?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Takes talent.
Yeah. It's special talent.
To be fair.
You're talking about Sony restructuring themselves and everything. I always found it kind of ironic that corporations these days basically run themselves like Soviet-era bureaucracies.
Yeah.
Except instead of just, you know, restructuring or selling off your, you know, one of your branches, you know, you just send them off to Gulag. But but they're basically doing their 5-year plan here, so.
Yep. And, as a segue from that, GDC is right around the corner, and they are going to have a 4-hour Project Morpheus feature.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, this is what I actually expected PlayStation Experience to be, but I guess they weren't quite ready for that. But now, imminently, Project Morpheus is going to be front and center, and that tells me that we're going to be seeing it by the holidays, like in our hands, on our heads,
On our heads, in our brains.
Yes.
Yeah, so a four-hour presentation or whatever they're going to be doing over at GDC, that's going to mean you're going to have a lot of developers coming out of that presentation in a puddle, basically.
Yes.
So.
Not a dry seat in the house.
Yeah, it's nice that they're getting there. Kind of wish they had gotten there sooner, but you know, we still have no real news of whether Oculus Rift is even going to be a thing, even though they continue to say it is.
They're pretty insistent about it.
Yeah, so it's good to see Sony's like pushing forward with it.
Yeah.
I just wonder if it's going to be PS4 exclusive or if they're going to let you use the use a PC on the other end of it. Because I know what I'd rather do.
Yeah. I've been under the impression that it's a PS4 accessory, but that would kind of limit its potential as well. So
yeah,
we'll see what they've got in mind. 4 hours, that's time to cover a lot of shit.
Yeah.
They've got something in mind, and we're about to find out.
Are you a fan of VR, Teresa? Like, been following what's going on here?
Teresa?
Sorry, microphone malfunction.
Oh.
No, I have not been following that.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay. I've been wanting to go over to Dave and Buster's and play that Star Wars Battle Pod thing that I've been hearing so much about.
I haven't heard about that.
Oh, you didn't know that? Okay, you know what Dave and Buster's is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, they got this huge thing called the Star Wars Battle Pod, which is basically a immersive arcade experience where there's literally this pod that they put you in that's covered with screens, and you know, you basically, it's sort of like an on-rail shooter, but it's completely like encased in this pod of screens with sound and everything, and it's like you're playing an on-rail Star Wars shooter, but you're completely immersed like inside an X-Wing.
Huh. I could see that being. I could see that being.
As you were talking about.
Yeah.
Talking about VR, I was like, that was. Tangents, folks.
Well, it's not that far of a tangent, because I could definitely see VR headsets being applied to arcades. Yeah. You know.
Or
and that, you know,
the other way around.
Well, I mean, Dave and Buster's.
You could see the VR headset being a way to port this stuff to console.
Yeah.
You know, Dave and Buster's back in the day, they used to have, you know, VR games in the arcades.
Yep.
Stuff to follow. Maybe we'll hear more about it at E3.
Yep. That's segue to our next topic. Phil Spencer already excited to get talking about E3. Says the planning is going very well. Always good when people are getting excited this early.
Yeah, although this is not really new for Microsoft. Usually they start planning their E3 in like January. So, they've been at this for, almost a couple of months now.
But it's not so much that they're planning, they're talking about it already.
Yeah, usually they stay a little quiet, so. But this is going to be pretty cool E3 regardless. We're in our second software year, so we should start seeing some really cool stuff coming out.
That's when everything starts to take
shape. Battletoads.
No, yep.
Yeah,
Battletoads. Battletoads. I never thought I'd hear from them again.
Well, he did wear that shirt during the Windows 10 event. Probably one of the best bits of foreshadowing ever. He also made that promise last year that JRPGs were on the way.
Yeah.
Which would be huge for the Xbox One, because anytime there's a piece of JRPG news coming down the pipe, lately it's been either 3DS or PlayStation 4.
The Xbox 360, it had two of my favorite JRPGs of the last generation on the system, Lost Odyssey and Blue Dragon.
Yeah.
Both of which
two games I really enjoyed. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a shame that they didn't sell. But
which is probably going to be the case for JRPGs on the Xbox One.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, they'll have an audience over here, but in Japan, the Xbox One's not doing so good, so...
Yeah, it's a non-starter in Japan.
Yeah.
In fact, from the sound of things, it almost seems like they're getting ready to fold up their Japanese operations, at least last time we heard anything about it. Which makes me wonder how developer relations would even work for Microsoft Game Studios, but... it seems like it is working, and so I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing what they've got in mind, and
I hope we get to see if maybe we'll see Kingdom Hearts 3 this year.
That's pretty much a given. It's already confirmed for both PS4 and Xbox One. If I remember correctly, it's pretty far along in development from what I understand, and it's got Tetsuya Nomura's undivided attention since he was taken off the Final Fantasy XV project.
Yeah.
So, I would be surprised if we didn't see Kingdom Hearts 3 at length at E3. And another thing Phil Spencer touched on was just that with E3 being later than usual this year and Gamescom being in the first week of August, it's almost going to be like we have one big show. Just throughout the summer, a whole party centered on just what we're going to be playing for the next year and a half. I love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's hope Microsoft starts, doing things like putting their E3 demos up on Xbox Live to download. Like, we don't care if they break or not. Let's just put them out there. So. Well, they did that one. They did that 1 year. It didn't go so well, but they did.
Yeah,
it was like the first year where test drive.
They need to bolster it up, and
only 1 year.
Yes.
Yeah. They tried it, and the servers got murdered, and that kind of scared them off. But I think things have grown to the point now where it should be safe to start opening the floodgates and really share the E3 experience with the end user.
Yeah.
And when that happens, I think we're going to start seeing E3 taken to whole new levels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You got E3.
I mean, if done correctly.
E3, Gamescom, TGS, GameStop.
Is Nintendo going to...
Yeah.
That's a thing, too.
Is Nintendo actually going to make an appearance at E3 this year instead of just a conference?
We don't know.
Still TBD, but I'd be with the lineup of stuff that they've got, I'd be very surprised if they didn't show.
They have to support Star Fox. They have to support Zelda.
Yeah.
and then there's that other next wave of stuff in the that's still in the pipeline. They swear Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem is still a thing. They got to support that. Hopefully, show a lot more of it because there's otherwise probably not going to be a whole lot to talk about after Zelda. Yeah, there's that new Fire Emblem.
They said that you know, didn't Miyamoto say that he was expecting Star Fox to come out before Legend of Zelda?
He guaranteed that we'd be playing it before Zelda.
Yeah.
So, you know, that I would not be surprised if it comes out maybe sometime this autumn.
Yeah, I would probably label it for an August or September release.
Yeah.
And
they all I got to say is they better have Crystal in there, because if they don't, there will be riots in the streets. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah. What happened was at the Game Awards, Aonuma and Miyamoto did this whole thing where they were showing off The Legend of Zelda, and they said, people will be playing this by the end of 2015.
Yeah.
And then Aonuma asked how Star Fox was coming along, and Miyamoto said, well, people are going to be playing that before they're playing Zelda. And then after that, Aonuma said, and that's cool, and people are going to be playing Majora's Mask 3D before they're playing Star Fox, which has already come down now.
Yeah.
So that frames things pretty specifically. And there's a new Fire Emblem coming to 3DS, too. They got to support that.
Yeah, Fire Emblem If.
Yes, I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, that game looks so really good. Incredible. Yeah. Don't forget, that's not the only game that Intelligent Systems is bringing, too. They've also got Codename Steam.
Yeah,
is that what it's called?
E3?
Yeah, probably.
It's Codename Steam.
Yeah.
So they won't need to support that at E3, though.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
God, that game looks crazy.
And
Abraham Lincoln in a giant mecha.
Yeah.
That's all I gotta say.
Just because you can.
Fire Emblem characters just randomly.
Yeah. You know, I actually did not know this, but you know, Intelligent Systems, on top of the game design, they're also like one of Nintendo's big hardware development tool people. Like if you're doing a contract with Nintendo to do a game for one of their systems, Intelligent Systems are the people who provide the Nintendo-centric development tools for those developers. Like, I know, like, if you go on their Wikipedia page, they've got one of the I think it's a DS emulator that they give to developers making DS games. Or made DS games. So I actually did not know that until recently.
That's cool. And speaking of stuff that's coming to Nintendo platforms, Rodia the Sky Soldier.
Oh, yeah.
Yuji Naka project that kind of got lost in the ether a few years ago. Coming to Wii U this year now.
Looks a lot like Nights into Dreams.
Yep. I cannot wait to get my hands on this game. It's Yuji Naka doing what he does, and that always makes gaming that much better. Yeah.
When he's on, he's on. Yeah. I mean, you know, I just got to say, too, the first time I played Sonic Adventure on my Dreamcast, and I played the casino level, and I was in the pinball area, and I got knocked up into the top of the pinball, and then Knights himself actually appears.
Yep. Hell yes.
Yes.
The casino scene. It was so easy to time out on that one.
But God, it was so much fun.
It was. And hopefully this leads to a more full-time return of Yuji Naka to the gaming industry, because we need him to be more active. It's just better when he is.
Yeah, he's one of the greats. You know, he is one of those developers who can bring a real sense of wonder to a gaming experience.
It's true.
I mean, this is the man who gave us Shenmue. And
no, that was Yu Suzuki.
No, that was Yu Suzuki. Right. God, sorry.
What we need is for...
Still, Nights and Dreams. Great game.
Yeah. What we need is for Sega to... reconcile or do whatever they got to do to get him back into the fold and revive Naka.
Okay.
And revive Sonic.
Yeah, get him back with Sonic Team.
Yeah, because if there's anybody who could do it right, it would be him.
Yeah. Did he work on Sonic Adventure 1 and 2? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Okay.
But
so that's one of the reasons.
But I think he also worked on Sonic 2006, so I probably shouldn't say like, too much there. So.
Did he?
I think so.
I hope not.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Shit happens.
I think Sonic, yeah, but, you know, like I said last time, Sega, you know, Archie and Sad AM Sonic, they've got great continuities there.
Yep.
Use them.
Yeah, if they need to... If they need
you pretty much got a guaranteed
somehow.
Million seller right there.
Yeah, I'd buy it.
Yeah, you've got a pre-made franchise right there.
Yeah. So, continuing the theme of Mood Whiplash on this week's episode, sticking with Nintendo though. So, turns out Satoru Iwata is really a fan of Metacritic,
which is disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So disappointing.
I mean it. It's okay to understand the fact that review scores inform a lot of sales figures and to acknowledge that, but yeah, Iwata, it seems really hung up about it.
You know, with the news of the official Metacritic seal, if they had been going the way of trying to do, like, you know, a PlayStation Redbox Greatest Hits,
uh-huh.
That would be great if they had done some sort of greatest hits theme based on sales, but based on the reviews, no. Just no.
No.
Yeah.
Less of that, please. We don't need that.
Yeah, it's
yeah. You always have to remember video game reviews you have to take with a grain of salt. Because you have to remember, money has all. There's always the chance that money has been changing hands there.
Yep, and has been the case. There's been that cloud hanging over the gaming media since 2007.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
You know, if
he was fired from GameSpot because he didn't give Kane and Lynch the review score that Eidos bought and paid for.
You know, and sites like, like, for example, I love Game Informer. I have a Game Informer subscription. They're one of my favorite magazines. But Game Informer is a subsidiary of GameStop, so
yeah.
Always keep that in mind.
Yep. So, Iwata, I guess it was a shareholders meeting or something, was really, really excited about how well Nintendo's games were performing on Metacritic. While, at one point, he acknowledged that it wasn't flawless, and then he just turned around and basically exposed his own obsession with it. I can't really put it any better than that. The link to there will be a link in the show notes to Kotaku's entire coverage of it. And, you cannot face palm hard enough.
Yeah.
You cannot head desk hard enough, and you probably don't want to. Just, God damn it.
Yeah, that about sums it up.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of just sad and depressing that Nintendo is going that route. I mean, You'd be happy that your games are performing well on Metacritic. Shouldn't you just be happy that your games are performing well?
Yeah. Especially now. Like, they just barely crawled out of the red ink, and this is really what you want to zero in on?
Yeah.
Especially after, the dissolution of Club Nintendo.
Yeah.
And did they not learn anything from all of the reviewing and whatnot, all of the data that we were sending to them about why we were playing these games, what got us there?
Exactly.
I don't understand. Yeah, I just don't understand. It's usually because we have a history with the game and we've played in the franchise before. They should know this. They've been around for God knows how long. Well, we know how long, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, we're old, so
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're not that old. Hey, I mean, now, Nintendo started off.
But by in gaming terms, we are.
Yeah.
We are. Yeah.
And then I guess continuing the Nintendo shit show, they have clarified their position on why the smaller new 3DS did not come to North America. And that entire reason has to do with brand streamlining. They've got it to the point now where it's the 2DS, the 3DS, and now the new 3DS XL. Where I guess they felt they didn't want to confuse people with, I don't know, I can't even get through this whole sentence without...
On the head desk?
Okay, brand streamlining. Let's just start there. You have B, and then you have S. That's pretty much what that boils down to. Because if you're going to streamline your brand, you should do it across the range and across regions as well.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised to that end that there isn't some kind of new 2DS that gives you, you know, that second analog functionality. Then, you know, some of those features, maybe not all of them, but at least gives it the functionality that it needs to play some of these new games that are going to be coming down the pipeline, like Xenoblade Chronicles.
I would buy it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who don't.
I actually really do hope. Yeah. If there's one thing to come out of the whole new 3DS debacle, at least, you know, more, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles will be more widely available.
Yeah.
Because that was my favorite Wii game, period. Just.
I can see it.
But. Damn it, Nintendo! We want to like you.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, they
really
got
do.
Revenue they're missing out on with those faceplates too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just think they'd be all over. It's not something that I would go for personally, just because I go after the XL automatically. My hands are teasing for me not to. And so.
Well, I have to go for the big ones because I can't play on a tiny screen. I just can't.
That is an issue.
My eyesight won't allow it.
Now, see, and I'm on the other side of the spectrum. I see these little pictures, you know, of these cute little things that look so lightweight that won't hurt my wrists, that will fit my hands well, and that will fit in my damn bag so I could take it with me without it weighing a ton. Because, you know, I'm not only packing mine around, I'm packing my kids around, too.
Yeah. Well, aren't you just Miss Dainty?
It's not here.
Yeah, but I get it. I understand, though.
Yeah, and it pisses me off a lot.
Yeah.
Do we know if the new 3DS is region locked?
I believe it is.
Okay, well that's.
Oh God.
I believe that the 3DS was kind of Nintendo's foray into region locking handhelds.
Stupid. Sorry.
No, go on. No, this is good podcasting. Go on.
Well, we'll see. There's, you know what? There's always a way around stuff. You never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
So, to pull the actual marketing quote, a senior manager at Nintendo of America, Damon Baker, said, "We're a different market, and now we have clear differentiation between these three systems. Before, there was a very limited difference between the 3DS and 3DS XL other than size. It was the same resolution, same functionality. And then, yeah, now there's the 2DS, 3DS, new 3DS XL, all of which have their own functionality and features. Do you want them to have all their own functionality and features?
No.
You're intentionally castrating the lower-end systems? God. Fuck.
Well, this has been a part... This kind of reminds me of something. I mean, this has always been sort of... part of, you know, Nintendo's business model is tacking on all these extra accessories to whatever their main consoles are any given time. I mean, when the NES came out, I can't even count how many different accessories go along with that. I mean, you had the Zapper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you had the Zapper, you had the Power Glove, you had Rob, you had just all this crap, needless crap that really no one needed.
Am I the only one here? That
maybe the Zapper.
That did what?
Probably.
It was this sort of IR field that motion detected into about a 1 foot cubic area.
I saw that on Angry Video Game Nerd.
Yeah, I actually had one of those.
Oh, and I forgot the track and field pad too.
Yep.
Oh,
that also was a thing.
Let's keep forgetting it.
Yeah, but like you're saying though, Brandon, these are all ancillary accessories. What we've got here is three disparate systems with different capabilities that may or may not run the same games.
Two of which are about to become more and more outdated every month.
Yeah, so it's like, it's not like, back then we didn't have the NES. Well, we ended up with the NES 2 eventually, but that was just, you know, shrinking down. It didn't play different games. So, yeah.
Right.
It's I don't know, I think they're a little misguided in this case.
I think they're going to be forced to bring the new 3DS over by the end of the year.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if that doesn't happen.
As the new 3DS exclusive software lineup grows and grows, and, you know, the list of people who can't play the XL system, you know, is also not going to change. Yeah, I don't see any recourse for Nintendo there.
Yeah.
That being said, I would totally welcome a 3DS player for the Wii U.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be hands down awesome.
Yeah.
That would be, that you would pretty much be giving, you would be giving mothers everywhere great relief.
Well, giving them a reason to tell their kids to go to their room and leave me alone so I could play on big screen.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it also solves the problem of console Pokemon.
Yeah.
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 Just get a 3DS player, plug, you know, X and Y in there, or Ruby and Sapphire, and go to town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they look good enough that I think they could hold up on a TV. Maybe need some anti-aliasing going on, but
yeah.
No, that shouldn't be an issue. Yeah. We use more than powerful enough to at least do that.
Yeah.
So, we've got another news item here where Nintendo, it seems pretty convinced that the Wii U gamepad's potential has not been fully realized. This comes from Iwata himself, and so I don't know if he's got particular ideas in mind or if this is just kind of waxing philosophical. I think a better question might be if it still matters. Because, you know, the Wii U, a lot of the software coming out for it, not all the software, but a lot of, you know, it's starting to move past that. And furthermore, everybody knows QOL is somewhere in the pipeline, somewhere waiting in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they've gotten everything out of the Wii U controller that they probably need to. And it might, you know, here's another thing to think about. The Xbox One's $350 right now.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's $50 above the Wii U.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be in their best interest to kind of maybe remove the controller from the package and get down to $200 as quickly as possible?
Of course.
You know, patch some of the key games to not rely so heavily on it. And, you know, when I say key games, I mean stuff like Super Mario 3D World or, you know, stuff like that. And...
Yeah. To me, this is more, you know, typical Nintendo. I mean, they'll release a platform, and early on in its life, in the first couple of years, developers will have absolutely no idea what to do with it.
Yeah,
you know, this was the case with the DS, and then you know, some very good DS games, first party by Nintendo, obviously started coming out and started showing how to use that platform properly. I think we're probably going to see the same thing for the Wii U.
Yeah. And then there was that whole oh shit moment with the Wii where I think we talked about this way back on the old Daiken Kai podcast where Miyamoto admitted that that Wii Music represented the last of the R&D prototype software that they'd cooked up when they were selling the Wii U to upper management, and that they really hadn't come up with any further such ideas since then.
I mean, I can think of a couple of ideas for, you know, for the gamepad that could make it more of an essential thing, but, you know, I'm not necessarily sure a Nintendo console would be able to handle it. Well, like, I was thinking something along the line of an old school, like, space shooter or something.
Okay.
Or a space simulator, and like the gamepad will sort of act as like a control panel.
Mm-hmm. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what they're going to be doing, but I also keep having, is going to be kind of interesting, though. So it's.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, though, I think about that, and then I also start having flashbacks of Steel Battalion.
Oh, God.
So. Well, yeah, you remember Steel.
That was, you know, awesome. If the Wii U can save us from another debacle like that, you know, okay, use the controller all you fucking want. I welcome it.
What, I was the only one that loved Steel Battalion?
I didn't say it wasn't a good game, I just...
Steel Battalion is fun, it's just... Little game, it costs like $150 frickin' dollars. Yeah.
It was bad. It was like $200.
Yeah.
Yes. But anyway.
Yeah, little game, big price. No thanks.
Yeah. Permanently delete your save file when you die. That was awesome.
Yeah.
A war mech roguelike. Who knew?
Yeah. Also, there was that news item a few weeks ago where Miyamoto said that there won't be a new F-Zero until the right controller comes along. That pretty much foreshadows QOL as being, I would say, sooner than later.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
Well, pretty soon, this whole discussion will probably neither be here nor there.
Yeah. I mean, in an earnings call a few months ago, AMD did kind of let slip that they've got new chips ready for the gaming market, and they've got a large contract sorted out.
That's pretty telling.
That's pretty telling because, you know, both Microsoft and Sony are already on board with AMD, and they're not going to be changing their specs. So, only leaves Nintendo, really. So,
yep.
Shows something's going on.
I don't think we'll be hearing about it at E3 necessarily, but we might hear rumblings about it coming closer to TGS.
Yeah.
Take a shot in the dark. But last news item, let's wrap it up on a brighter note.
Please?
Yeah.
Square Enix wanting to bring back some old franchises now that they own IDOS and have that IP catalog.
Yeah.
And a couple of these, I swear, I never thought I would hear from them again. Gex, for example, that is one I have not heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gex. For the record, I actually really like. Yeah, Gex was fun, and Fear Effect. You know, it may not have been the best action game, but as far as like diversity in gaming, it did have some major steps that it took. But Anachronox, holy crap! I never thought I would hear that name again.
Yeah.
Ever.
If Tom Hall isn't behind this, that pitch, it's going to be kind of a shame because he has always wanted to finish that.
Okay. Okay. Those of you out there who don't know what we're talking about, Anachronox was one of the handful of actual quality games that came out of Ion Storm, like along with Thief Deadly Shadows and
Deus Ex.
Yeah. This was one of the really good games that came out of the very sort of just the whole debacle that was Ion Storm. it was kind of a humorous sort of cyberpunkish RPG. It was kind of like Final Fantasy VII before Final Fantasy VII was a thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, Tom Hall was the main guy behind it, and I've got it on my computer right now. It was a great game.
Yeah,
it really was.
Aware of it from a maybe five minute feature on G4. back around the time it first came out, but it looked pretty solid. I still remember seeing it.
Yeah.
It left enough of an impression for me to say that. Mm-hmm.
Graphically it looks really primitive now, but it was so good.
It looked to be really good pace.
Back then.
Yeah. The scene looks pretty good. But it just kind of ends, which is kind of a shame.
Kind of like Ion Storm.
it was originally supposed to be a three-part series.
Oh.
Yeah. It was going to be Tom Hall's magnum opus. Yeah. And unfortunately, that didn't happen.
Maybe this could open the door to it.
Yeah. And that's another guy we really need back in the gaming industry is Tom Hall.
I agree.
When he was on, he made great stuff. Yeah. And just getting back to Gex for a second, you know,
if
that really is just
not involved in that project. Fuck that whole thing.
He is the heart and soul of the Gex character.
Yeah.
Just that whole game. That was that franchise was just like it was one of the PlayStation's early greats.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it was a 3DO exclusive when it first got started, and even back then, it was a properly good platform game.
It was
something that they really could have built upon, and I think one of their big failings, going beyond price and everything, I think they should have pushed that more front and center than they did.
Yeah. By the time Gex came out, though, the 3DO was kind of already on its last legs.
Yeah.
The PlayStation was just starting to hit the market, so it kind of made sense for Crystal to port that over to PS.
Yeah, and I was happy when they did. I ended up playing it for the first time when I bought the Saturn version.
Yeah. God, it's weird to forget. It's weird to remember that, considering the way the gaming industry now, where there's only like three main consoles, there was like a time when there was like six or seven that were available.
Yep. For context, I still have Gex as one of the few non-RPGs on my PlayStation TV.
Yeah.
It's just one of those that you want to keep around.
Yeah.
Oh, 3DO. You know what? You mentioned 3DO. Do you remember that game, Way of the Warrior?
Oh God.
Do we have?
It was one of the early Naughty Dog games.
I think it was before they made Crash Bandicoot.
They did some stuff like for the Genesis and for MS-DOS before that.
I'd rather think of it as a first game, though, because that actually makes it somehow digestible.
Yeah. It was a really
crummy... I'm not being nice this week.
No, for this one, you don't have to. It was one of those games that came out during a time when everyone and their mother was trying to get some of that sweet, sweet Mortal Kombat action, and it just...
It was not good.
No, it was not. It certainly wasn't the worst Mortal Kombat ripoff. That
Tattoo
honor belongs to Tattoo Assassins, and that thing didn't even get a wide
see
release.
The light of day.
Yeah, I mean they knew they were polishing a turd, and they just killed it on the spot.
Like, nope.
Time killers,
which oddly enough, although that game sucked, the spiritual successor, Bloodstorm, was actually pretty decent.
Yeah.
But there was that, and I swear, I remember there were so many more, too, but that are just so obscure now. God, that was a weird-ass time growing up to be a gamer, man.
It was a lot of fun, too.
Yeah. I was consuming Ninja on the Jaguar. That wasn't very good either.
Oh, God, that was... Yeah, that was that one. I mentioned Primal Rage before, and it was just a weird time to be a gamer, but it was also so much fun. And then Virtua Fighter came out.
If you stayed away from all the chaff, then you were pretty happy.
Yeah. But then Virtua Fighter came out, and that completely changed the whole game.
And it saved us all.
Yeah.
And we lived happily ever after.
Mostly.
The end.
What do you guys think of the Square Enix actually taking game pitches though openly? I mean, that's I don't know too many publishers that really do that.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just that. They're specifically taking pitches from indie developers,
which
I love everything about that.
Yeah.
I think maybe Square Enix is starting to, they've come to the fact that if they're going to keep their business alive, they're going to have to start embracing some of the Western developers. So
it's not really been a problem for them in recent years. I mean, it's been a minute since they bought Eidos, and they've kind of built an entire Western division around them that's been pretty good to them.
Yeah. But it could be, you know, maybe it's just, you know, some of the people who grew up on those games, you know, are now in game development, and I guess there's just, you know, talk and reminiscence in the industry, and Square Enix kind of heard some of it and
realize there's, you know, they've got these stuff.
Yeah, they got these old IPs, you know, that they got when they purchased Eidos, and you know, they just got them sitting around. They thought, hell, here's a good place to make money. And what better way to get these old franchises back than to reach out to the indie crowd?
You know, the people who pretty much grew up on them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good move, and it looks like, you know, Square Enix is really, you know, trying to reinvent themselves. If they're going to split off, you know, registering Squaresoft and Enix again, it tells me that they may be looking at a wider branding strategy and actually getting away from the Square Enix name, which just makes them sound like a big corporate conglomerate that nobody likes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a part of me that moving their RPG stuff to the direction that Yosuke Matsuda has been wanting to push before they start focusing on other things. But you hear some of the names that are involved in this new initiative, and you can't help but, you know, smile.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't forget, Square Enix has been kind of losing money over the last few years, so
that's why they've got a new boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. They kind of figured, you know, we need to start changing direction or we're going to eat it big time.
Matsuda has been on the record as saying that we screwed up by trying to shift our JRPG business toward a more global audience that doesn't really exist when we can make something more traditional and it'll sell like mad.
Yeah.
Yep.
And ever since then, I've been paying very, very close attention to everything Square Enix does, and I've not been disappointed. So, I don't know. I'm really excited for to see what they do over the next 5 years or so.
Yeah.
I think they're about to hit a renaissance.
Yeah. Let's just hope they get off of the attitude that a game that sells 4 million copies is a failure. Because I don't know how that's a failure.
Yeah, depending on how money they piss.
Well, that was in. Yeah, I mean that. But the thing is that all that is entirely Square Enix's fault.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Crystal Dynamics' fault. You know, it's not the game, not the Tomb Raider's fault. I mean, the game sold well, got great reviews, and by all accounts will be a success, but Square Enix pissed away so much money on other projects.
Yeah.
You know, this is just that coming back to bite them in the ass. There ain't no other way to say it.
Yeah.
And that's probably part of the reason they also have a new boss.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Meanwhile, Yoichi Wada, the old boss, has a pretty good gig running their cloud gaming arm now, Shinra Technologies. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing what they come up with as well, to be completely honest, because they're getting the right people involved in it, that's for sure.
I'm always wondering if some of their financial difficulties is because they pissed away so much money on Final Fantasy The Spirits Within.
That was the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
It really was.
Advent Children.
Well, Advent Children was at least good.
Yeah. Advent Children at least was worth watching. So, and I don't think it cost nearly as much money as Spirits Within did.
Yeah.
No, didn't.
So, winding down, last week's question of the week about Voice of Dissent and whether I should occasionally do an inverse of the original concept instead of playing popular games that I didn't really care for, also occasionally playing less popular games that really resonated with me. I was buried under exactly one comment. on that, sort of asking for clarification on what kind of games I'd be playing on that. You could definitely expect something like Grandia 3 to be on there. That is probably the best example. Maybe some Battle Arena Toshinden, just because I feel like playing Battle Arena Toshinden. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't get four episodes out of that to be damn sure, but, no, you know.
Get a half hour or so out of it.
Yeah, it'd be entertaining.
Battle Arena Toshinden is the only fighting game where you can play a Russian dominatrix.
never really thought of it that way. But yeah, so that's just a couple of ideas of stuff of games I'd be playing on those kinds of episodes. I've still got it down to two possibilities are what I'm going to play next, because the last Suikoden episode did go up a couple days ago. But moving on to this week's question of the week, in light of the fact that Dead or Alive 5 last round just came out, what we want to hear from you guys, do you buy cosmetic or otherwise non-gameplay-centric DLC? I think that can invite some pretty interesting responses. And so, I'll personally admit, you know, I did buy quite a bit of the stuff for Virtua Fighter V Final Showdown. Because there's so much cool customization shit that you can do with that game that you want the options there.
Yeah. And then they came out with Complete Edition, which kind of obviated all of that.
Yeah, which was on sale for $6 recently. Hopefully a lot of you guys got in on that, because... Yeah. It's a fantastic game. It really is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I'll admit I have bought a couple of, cosmetic customization packages here and there. But it's not something I make a huge habit out of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's gotta be particularly special cosmetic DLC for me to get a hold of it. Yeah. You know, just if it's just a costume, it's got to be a pretty outstanding one.
Yeah.
Like one that I actually want to have my character wearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. For example, if Tecmo decides to release Ein's DOA 3 outfit, I'll get that.
Which one are you talking about?
Yeah, the Black Duster.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Which is not
bad. I did buy some of the Street Fighter 4 ones as well, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Nope.
Pretty simple. My favorite part apparently.
I mean, it would add up to a whole lot of money if you ended up getting everything for 5.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like $90. Nope.
Yeah.
I guess if you had, you know, a little self-control about you and didn't go for everything, that would probably be, I mean, I wouldn't put anybody down for doing it, but for me personally, nah, I'll save the money for something else.
Like actual games.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Well, I mean, if it comes down to, you know, buying two DOA 5 outfits with my, you know, say I got $4 in my Microsoft wallet, and, you know, say Another World 20th anniversary being on sale for $4. I'm definitely going to go for that route.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, interesting to see what other people are thinking about this one.
That a show?
I think, not sure, but yeah, I think that's a show.
Yeah.
It was something at
pretty
least.
Pretty much. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Whatever it was. Just before we go, just remember Windwalkers. Go to the Kickstarter page, take a look at it.
Yep.
Really interesting project. Come hell or high water, they're planning on getting that project through. Mm-hmm. So I really hope it does, because it's really just, we need more innovation in the gaming world, and that is a very unique game.
It is.
If they can pull it off effectively, it's probably going to be a game changer. So also remember, Forge Animation, they're the people behind it. Go visit their website, forge-animation.net. And Go take a look. Ooh. Remember, it's in French and in English, so.
Well, I want to thank everybody for watching, and I am Phil DeNolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
And we'll see you all next week.